listeners. This is Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. I am Zach Gandra, and with me, as always, is the immemorable. I'm saying that word wrong again. Cannot be copied, Steve Gandra.
They know what you mean.
All right, Steve.
Hey, listeners, we've got an awesome guest for you today.
We do. Steve always goes into the guests. You forget the basic banter chit chat, Steve.
I'm excited about
it. We need to get
guests.
People excited about excellent cultures, about what we're doing, about the radio show and the guest. And we have some new things coming up that we did to talk. We've been brainstorming how to get you guys more involved in excellent cultures, and as well, we can't divulge very much information, but in the next few weeks, we're going to be doing some contests.
All we can tell you is that the recent Gallup poll has identified that 21% of those of you out here who work for a living are not engaged in your jobs.
71% are not.
You're right.
71% are not.
18% hate your jobs, and the main reason you hate your jobs is because you hate your
boss.
That's
right.
And we're going to have a I hate my boss contest or something like that.
You can't give it away yet.
As soon as the lawyers get over it, probably will end up being an I love my boss.
By the time the lawyers get through it. All right, Steve, stop talking. You're divulging
too much. All right.
By the way, we are excited to be here today. We are excited to have a wonderful guest. We have a three-time Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter named John Harrington with us today, as well as a business owner. I leaned away from the mic there for a minute, so I might have muted myself, but I'm pretty sure you heard about that. We're excited about our guest today, Mr. John Harrington, three-time Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter, as well as a entrepreneur, business owner, leader, and all-around good guy. We're happy to have you on the show today, John.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, I can tell you the main reason I wanted to have John on the show was because he knows more about what's going on Wall Street with businesses in both the public and the private sector, and as the most tell-it-like-it-is guy that exists on the planet.
That's right.
If you're looking for somebody that's going to sugarcoat stuff, that's not John.
You're not looking for an investigative reporter if you're looking for sugarcoating.
Yeah, yeah. But John is about...
There are plenty of candy stores up and down the street, guys.
There are plenty.
So who needs another guy selling juju beans?
Oh, man. Sure. I like that. That's the best way to say that ever. That is perfect. Yeah. There are plenty of candy stores.
John is about the greatest, most unpolitically correct, straight up, tell it like it is guy I've ever met. And, on top of that, he really knows what he's talking about. And I've never known anybody to be able to shout him down and get away with it, because John does his research and, is in the business of, doing research at Verify Research Associates. So, John, tell our listeners about you, yourself, the work that you do, your background, what's Verify doing today? Love your mission statement and love the whole cut to the chase idea of getting through the clutter to get to what really matters.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I think it's a great thing to tap into what's going on out there from, different perspectives. And having once, been in the radio biz myself, I still think this is the greatest medium there is out there for people to be able to get information and also have time to digest it by listening in. So I just wanted to put that on the table. Well, my background is basically I'm a trained journalist, have been involved in journalistic, either straight media writing, going all the way back to high school. And right now we practice a form of journalism that we call research journalism, which we use in Verify Research Associates, sort of journalistic digging, fact-finding, interviewing, trend analysis, and stuff that you would do for a very in-depth type of fact-finding and information intel gathering, and then trying to make sense out of it after all the raw data has been brought in. So we use the journalistic methods for that rather than surveys or, canned stuff that you see the internet breeding out now, like SurveyMonkey or QuestionPro, or we don't do that sort of thing. We do specific work on specific topics. A lot of it's focused on the technology sector. Quite a bit of it is focused on the financial world surrounding tech investment, both in the private sector and also on the publicly traded names. We do a lot of work for institutional investment funds that are looking to find alternative information besides just what management of companies might be telling them. So we really operate down in the weeds at the marketplace level, where customers pay money for products and services, to see if the momentum is matching up with what a lot of the management people will say about how their companies are faring. And so it's a pretty very unique type of research that we do there. And then we do a lot for industry people who want to know, what they should be looking at in terms of, market demand for a certain type of tech product or service. And then on the technology side of the business, we do an awful lot of work for enterprises and organizations that are trying to figure out how to align their IT resources and their digital communication resources with the mission of whatever it is their enterprise is up to. I think, Steve, one of the examples I've given you in the past is you get some guys and they own a bakery, they bake bread, and they want to get their bread out to as many customers as they can. Well, in this day and age, you're going to have some kind of a digital network involved in every aspect of ordering, distribution, and all the rest of that. And so it's forced a lot of companies that just want to bake bread and sell it to become basically like mini telecom companies. And that's a real problem for folks who have to get too deeply wound into trying to straighten out IT operations when what they should be doing is making money at whatever their business is. So we get hired a lot and they come in and try to align the human mission with what they're using for digital tools to affect a positive outcome for them in an ongoing basis from a revenue generation point of view. And that's becoming more and more and more of what we're doing these days, even more than the Wall Street stuff, because people are really trying to figure out how to get themselves positioned properly with their information flow without having the whole digital thing overtake their business objective. So my background, I grew up in the Northeast, really very classic Irish family, tough guy dad, very well educated, worked for International Harvester Trucks. We were up in New England and down in the Mid-Atlantic states. I was like many, many guys in our generation whose, parents were the World War II era coming of age, and my dad was in the Army and came back and finished college, was an All-American basketball player at Siena in Albany, New York, and was just a straight shooter, which is where I think some of that comes from. Very difficult to get to my dad to he would not have been hired by the State Department.
Maybe the CIA, huh?
Yeah, he was more of a analyze this situation and do something about it. So in his honor, we have a little tagline on our website that says, if you actually want to get something done, that's the time to call us. But we discourage people from calling us if they want to have endless meetings to solve straightforward situations. We think that they should pay other consultant firms 3 or 4 years worth of their gross profits and accomplish nothing before they get to the point where they call us. Or you could skip that and you could just call us and then get your project done pretty quickly. So that's kind of the way we operate. We're not really big on beating around the bush.
Yeah. Well, one of the great things that I've always admired about John and liked about him, our mission at Excellent Cultures has a lot to do with using scientific data to cut through the clutter and get to what really matters. John uses investigative reporting to cut through the clutter and get to what really matters and make it happen fast, and has got tons of successes in huge ROI opportunities that he's manifested and helped companies create and have happen, and done it very straightforward, very simple, and very quick.
John, good or bad? I think TMZ reporting when I think investigative reporting. Would that be...
That's bad.
That's the bad way of investigative reporting?
I mean, it's funny that you'd bring it up, though, because what's happened is that what used to be considered to be a vital public interest reporting, which is really purely investigative. All reporting, any good journalism, should be investigative in nature. Because just because somebody gives you a quote, it doesn't mean that what they've said to you in the quote it has any truth tied to it whatsoever.
Right.
It could be a total lie.
Yeah, absolutely. And as long as, for some people, journalism is if you quoted the person accurately, then you've done your job. I mean, my approach to it's always been the story, you know, starts with the quote. If somebody says X, Y, and Z, I'm then going to go out and make sure that what they told me has, you know, holds water.
Right.
And otherwise, you just become a tool. And, you know, and then that's what's driven most, I think, most people to think that the news business is really not discernible now from the entertainment business.
Right.
Which is why you have what I call the Kardashian catastrophe.
Yes.
Overtaking, you know, the newsstands in the United States. And it's really too bad because it's even polluted the what used to be, you know, like CNN and some of these, you know, network news outlets they're just not getting into the teeth of things anymore. And, you know, it takes an awful lot of work in order to be able to, you know, try to lay it out for people every day. And then what I think the sad part about it is, you guys, is that people oftentimes don't want to hear about, you know, the real stuff that they should be paying attention to. They would actually rather not know.
Right.
So they could claim some form of blissful ignorance.
Yep.
And then that's opened the candy store up, literally. There's another candy store reference for those of you who are keeping score at home. but that's opened up an awful lot of room for the malefactors of this world to get an upper hand to do whatever they want, to rip people off or, sway things in certain directions that benefit them ultimately and cut a lot of people out of the mix.
Yeah.
So, you know, a free and vigorous, you know, hardcore press is really something I think that needs to be encouraged. And unfortunately, this idea of TMZ being investigative reporting is really it's a disease that's unfortunately here to stay.
Yeah. I'm glad we cleared that up because that'll lead us into our next segment after the commercial break right here. All right, guys, we have John Harrington with us today on Biz Culture Matters. Engage us right away. You got a question for John or any of our associates, email us at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. We're going into a break. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life. to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we are back with Biz Culture Matters. Our guest today is John Harrington, three-time Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter and founder and starter and entrepreneur of Verify Research Associates that you got to heard in the first segment right there, what they're all about. We also got the clarity that true investigative reporting tactics is not TMZ and the Kardashian. What did you call it? The Kardashian catastrophe?
Kardashian catastrophe.
What does TMZ stand for?
I don't remember. I don't know.
I'm so adverse am I to even touching it. I don't know, and I don't want to know.
Yeah, that's good. We don't. None of us do.
So let's just say it's the Kardashian.
Kardashian catastrophe. Yeah, that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about investigative
reporting. Manifestation of the Kardashian catastrophe.
Yeah. Oh man.
So hey, John. What I think is so cool about how you've transitioned your strengths and your personality into a global business that's making impact, all over the world and helping tons of companies cut to the clutter and, get to what really matters in a hurry, which is what our mission's about at Excellent Cultures. Give us a couple of examples of how you've used, your methodology of, what companies have you experienced, trying to make it happen? They spend all of their annual gross revenue on consultants for 2 or 3 years and just got a lot of warm and fuzzy experiences, but no real results. Give us a couple of examples of projects that you guys have done that have made such a significant difference. And, we want to steer folks in the right direction away from, warm and fuzzy, pay a lot of money to consultants who are more about getting your money than they are solving your problems.
Right.
And we know that's what you're about. Give us a couple examples of projects.
Well, I mean, there's one that immediately leaps to mind because it's pretty fresh in our bag of projects that we've had an immediate impact on changing the course of the project. And I'll preface it by saying quite a bit of what we emphasize and probably which dents our revenue stream a little bit is we're very big on teaching people how to say no, and we're not going to do that. That's really one of the scariest words in the English language is when you've had 15 or 20 meetings with a team of consultants, and I'm not going to name any of the people that we compete against other than the fact that some of them have three initials that begin with I and end with M and have a B in the middle.
And one that used to begin with A before they imploded.
That's right. We did one where there was a large retail chain that owns supermarkets. And in the supermarkets, there are bank kiosks and pharmacies, and I wish I could name the company, but it was an NDA situation, but needed desperately to upgrade their entire data footprint. And there was a principal at this company who was at the top of the company who was related through a marriage to some guys who are in the, cloud computing business.
Mm-hmm.
And before the cloud computing business had even gotten as advanced as it is right now, so this would be like a couple years ago.
So it was family favors instead of business.
It was pointing in that direction where due to the zeal of the cloud computing guys, they had convinced this executive that this outside third-party hosting company could take over the entire data operation for this 1,800-store large company, and like I said, among other things, they had supermarkets. And of course, if for any of your listeners and you guys, if you step into a supermarket nowadays and you go to check out anything, and something goes wrong at the cash register with the scanner, and the little digital weight thing doesn't come back and tell you how much the 7 carats you're trying to purchase weigh, and the code that you punch in suddenly isn't being registered by your network, you could have literally a few carats. The checkers, they're like, well, what do we do? Well, I can't take any money from this person unless the register's working.
Yeah.
You could have something as silly as a carrot shut down an 1800 store data operation.
Yeah.
And so they had had meeting after meeting after meeting, and we got brought in to advise some board members of this operation to analyze the situation as to whether or not they could feasibly outsource their entire IT operation in a retail setting like this. And by the time we got done going through all the reasons why they would be suicidal for them to do it, and then gave them all the data from network breakdowns, breaches, and security, on and on, everything that we've seen in other things, we stopped them from doing that, and they were able to move forward on the plan to get their data facilities modernized, and things turned out for the better. And there were a lot of lessons within that to be learned, because what happened was there were a lot of people who had taken meetings and had meetings and a lot of discussions, and to get through that exercise without alienating anybody who had been considering doing the other route, which was outsourcing, to not make them feel silly or stupid was somewhat of a diplomatic trick. But at the end of the day, what we did was we got them to just say no to things like, we're going to say no to network failures. How do you say no that you're never going to allow any kind of an extreme network outage across your footprint? Well, in order to do that, you've got to exert some control. And we started taking them through all the levels of control that people give away in their networks, and you know what the consequences of giving away control can be in certain situations. Sometimes you want to give away control. Like, who wants to control 14-year-old emails? I mean, that's a great thing that you can outsource and stick in some low-grade storage dump someplace. But if you're talking about, ceding control over your minute-to-minute, cash flow coming through point of sale or whatever to, complete third-party transmission systems and so on and so forth, without understanding what it is, that's making you function in your underlying infrastructure, then you're giving control of your whole company away.
Yeah.
And so the question you have to ask people, in that situation is, do you want to say yes or no to essentially ceding complete control of your company to people who are not part of your company? And when I think you put it to people in that way, what we were able to do was to get them to pull back, reassess where they were at, and then get into a simplification sequence where they're able to then take a hard look at their facilities and their resources and to find better ways to streamline their processes, but to make sure that they kept their hands on their the core of their revenue engine.
Yeah, and basically the lesson learned was just say no to network shutdowns, network outages, network failures. And it's interesting, once that mindset was established, how other decisions get made and follow that. Any idea, did you document any of the cost savings that took place in that case? It had to be in the millions.
Well, I mean,
maybe billions.
Yeah, let me tell you what's really difficult about documenting, physical cost savings in things that you've prevented. All right. And sometimes you can look at it in terms of things that are, obvious tragedies. How much money would Asiana Airlines be saving right now if their pilots hadn't seemingly misjudged the landing at San Francisco International and had made a routine landing?
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay, so you can't, you know, how do you say to somebody, well, and this is the trick in tech, and a lot of your listeners out there in this region are going to be involved in technology businesses and are going to be nodding their heads up and down right now when you go to make your ROI statement for the value delivered versus, you know, the return on the investment that we're paid for having been brought in. You know, how much is it worth a minute to have an 1,800 store supermarket chain down?
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge.
Right. So if you save them from 10 hours of outages in a year, what is that worth? I mean, you know, it's the let's just put it this way, by preventing you from making that, you know, coming up short of the runway error in the first place, whatever amount of money you've laid out isn't going to be a fair amount that we get paid anyway.
Not even close.
No. So, yeah. But this is the kind of mindset is that unfortunately what's happened out here, and I think this gets to what you guys do, which is culture. The culture is, though, we're not going to do anything about this until we have the catastrophe.
And by then it's too late in
right.
many cases.
Well,
yeah.
By then, you know, the calculator is spinning out of control on what the real costs are because they have a ripple effect
yeah.
through an organization. We cleaned up on another deal. We do a lot of fiber optic, dark fiber network identification of assets. So if you wanted to connect, say, 15 or 20 locations together on a private IP network that's not transiting the lit phone company circuits, so in other words, you're not going on, say, like AT&T's backbone or Verizon's backbone or whomever, but you were able to get your hands on some dark fiber and then purpose light the fiber yourself and run it through neutral interconnect points to, you know, build out your own private dedicated network. You know, that is something that people are really getting interested in doing right now. And so we do some identification of assets where larger companies and government agencies can get dark fiber and then provision the fiber and have their own network that sort of runs outside the lit carriers' backbones.
Yeah.
And we you know, run these ROI schedules on, you know, what they would spend over, say, a 3 to 5 year period of time for X amounts of bandwidth going over, you know, those circuits versus, you know, getting lit transit and then just paying on that every month. And, you know, obviously up front, you're going to go to the expense of getting your hands on the fiber leases and then lighting and everything, and you're going to take a hit up front. But as you get further into the deployment, all of a sudden people start thinking, wow, look at this, you know, instead of spending $150,000, $60,000 a month, we're well below that. And I think, you know, a lot of this has to get into, and I mean, I hate to say this, you've got to get to people who can take a longer view and set a strategy for their enterprise that supersedes their own ego
yeah.
or they're trying to collect in cost-cutting bonuses on a per annum basis.
Exactly.
You know, it's getting very difficult now to get people to take that five-year view because they're afraid of what the economy will do or whatever. But if you don't take measures with technology hurtling forward as fast as it does right now to come up with strategic plans for leveraging technological advances that maybe even haven't even been invented yet, but you know are coming,
right?
Then how can you build in those longer-term operational cost savings? You know, you're always going to be chasing your tail. So we try to get people to shift away from thinking about things in immediate terms to thinking about things in terms that can really benefit organizations for years to come.
And that's huge because they got to see past the horizon. They got to see what's coming that they can't see yet. We got to take a break. We're going to cut into the middle of the Sauce and Combo with John. We'll be right back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams' managing partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
We're back, listeners, to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. John, you were just talking about helping businesses and leaders see past the horizon, to see 5 years down the road. How do you do that?
Well, we build data points that are that have maybe 1 foot rooted in the present, and then we spend an awful lot of time being involved in what's going on out on the bleeding edges of R&D, with particularly with communications technology. You know, fiber optic capacity speeds, where you know, new fiber optic undersea networks are planned to be built, who's putting them down, what areas of the world they're going to serve, you know, how to get in early on trying to solidify your position in you know, making sure that you can tap into some of that newfound you know, communications capabilities if you want to do some market expansion. So we keep databases on every, pretty much every fiber optic network that isn't, you know, super tiny, going from like building Y to building Z on a college campus. But, you know, it's what we go, what we call a wide area network, that whether it's a local wide area network, a metro, a regional, a national, and then in, you know, an undersea and then an international fiber development. We have a motto within our group, and we have people who are associated with us all over the world who are part of the associates of Verify Research Associates. And our motto is to follow the glass. If you can follow where the fiber is going that it hasn't been yet, or is going to be beefed up, and you know, what new sorts of networks are going in, what the developments are for extra bandwidth on them and stuff, you're going to be able to be quite predictive of the opportunity to create economic development. And here's the reason why. And this is where I don't think, you know, not to sound like we're know-it-alls, but nobody can argue with us this one point right here and win the argument. You really can't do anything at all in this world now and moving forward unless it's networked. And I mean physically networked, you know, with the computer networks. And, you know, you've got... You know, I mean, the next thing you'll know, the kids on the corner, you know, are going to be like that Verizon commercial opening the lemonade stand, and the next thing you know, there'll be global lemonade entrepreneurs because they have a smartphone. That,
right. that
is really not that far-fetched.
Yeah.
Networked communications is the big enabler for people who have been cut out of economies to, and information streams to get into economies and in information streams. Now, there's a dilution effect there where, you know, the more people you get in, then the less, you know, money is available to go to each person. But the entrepreneurship pops up and goes through the roof when you have access. And access, I mean access to networked communications. So, you know, if you're really going to be involved in any kind of a business, pretty much from a one-person business on up, right now to a large multinational corporation, you're completely at the mercy of the fact that they're operating across networks. I mean, you can't buy gas at the gas station now because unless you know, you're in some really primitive setting, you know, because the gas pumps are networked. You really can't do anything transactional in a first world economy now without having the transaction happen on a network.
Right.
Our business is focused on the primary building block now, which is the enablement of networked communications. I mean, if you're in the food chain, anywhere along the pathway from your brain into your handheld smartphone device to the wireless signal that goes up to the radio on the tower that then gets backhauled by the wire or the fiber going down, sent over to the first router, and then on from there to, you know, distribution across the, you know, the global internet or on a private network or through a VPN or whatever. It all winds up going through a data center someplace or a series of data centers. And so you've got these billions of network transactions going on second by second around the globe. And obviously that system is what's allowing people, now that we've gone in that direction, to become a digital global economy. That's what you have to be able to deal with in order to be, you know, making any money. And so our argument and our deal and our business proposition is really simple. You've got to align your humans with that digital reality.
Right.
So that the digital reality doesn't overtake the humans and the humans become subservient to the digital reality. And you've got to get the humans to understand that the whole digital inner workings are a tool set. And so then you have to teach them how to, you know, properly leverage the tool set to, you know, bake their bread and deliver their bread, so to speak. So it becomes a real quagmire of confusion for an enormous number of business people out there to even begin to get to a square one, to know how to straighten things out when they start getting bent. And when we talk about bent networks, we're talking about people running around with their own devices. They're downloading stuff from the company network onto personal devices. And it's just a real free-for-all. And, you know, what we try to do is we try to come in and apply, you know, some common sense to it. So if you're, you know, the greatest objective you can have is carried out on a straight line. So when you've always heard the term, let's get from point A to point B, what's the shortest distance between two points? It's a straight line. And what we see in business now, because of the digital world that we're living in and digital communications being the basis of pretty much every business out there right now, is just that line is tugged all over the place. It has more turns in it than a big Formula One race course. And so we try to get in and see where all those turns, bottlenecks, bent pieces in the network are, both the human network and the digital network, and then we try to see what we can do to get people to take a step back so we can start drawing straight lines. And you know, sometimes people they don't like that.
Yeah, for sure. Anytime it involves accountability and change, it can get painful. So John, lately on our show we've been talking a lot about the recent Gallup poll of the American workforce, and a guy by the name of Timothy Egan wrote a very revealing article in the New York Times that we've quoted from time and time again, where, you know, we've got among 100 million people in this country that hold full-time jobs, 70% of them either hate going to work or have mentally checked out to the point of costing the company's money and are roaming the halls spreading discontent, according to Tim's perspective. And then, so we've got only 30% of workers that are actively and meaningfully engaged. And then from that, you know, the numbers go deeper, which is kind of very dismal for the future of America. So, you know, I know you deal with this all the time in every one of your, you know, human being and technology interfaces. Tell us, you know, what's the advice that you give to CEOs today about, you know, if you're going to, you know, identify, you know, what's a culture, an ideal culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement look like? I mean, what does it look like?
Except we're going to go to a break, and then you're going to come back with that. You ready, John?
Yep.
All right. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTcultures or Facebook/excellentcultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
So before the break, we were talking about the recent Gallup poll of employee disengagement. I don't know why you could even call it engagement when we've got 70 to 72% who are effectively disengaged. In fact, you know, Jim Clifton, the CEO and chairman of the Gallup Group, actually estimated that this disengagement was costing the United States economy between $450 and $550 billion annually. So we asked John for his opinion before the break of, you know, what advice is he giving to CEOs of a vision of a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement in today's digital economy. John, what do you say?
Well, I think, Steve, you're probably in a room when we had a meeting last year, and I think you happened to be there.
I was there.
And the very first thing that the culture, you know, starts with the person who's, you know, the acknowledged leader. Unless you're dealing with like a triumvirate or a troika or something like that, you're always going to have one person who is running the show, at least in a nominal sense, with the title of either president or CEO or some other overarching authority. And the very first thing that we do when we get in a conversation with them is we tell them to crawl out of their own self-made digital silo and start taking I believe that delegating in people is critically important once you've established a level of trust in an organization. And then you know that you've got a good team, then delegating is a great way to keep your people empowered and engaged. But you've got to make sure that you're actually delegating and not relegating. And in the digitally captured CEO relegates because they don't have enough knowledge about their own operation to delegate. So they'll say the digitally distracted and completely, overrun CEO in the culture that we're in now is spending too much time paying attention to things that are not directly applicable to his or her organization. They're reading too much stuff. They're looking at this or looking at that. They're just not focused on the humans that they got around them and all the way through the organization. And as a result of that, they become removed. And so when a problem happens and they call in a subordinate and they say, I just got the numbers in from this division and they're terrible and I want to know why and I want you to go do something about it. And that is not delegating. That's relegating. That's the person in charge relegating some subordinate to go in and clean up a mess that the person in charge doesn't want to have to deal with or is unaware of why it's happening or whatever, which is why you have so many disaffected people walking around the workplace. Because what's happened is that, and I've been in, I can't tell you how many meetings over the past few years, and my partner, Peter Giannakopoulos, and myself have sat in and listened to, people just below the C-suite in meetings where nobody from the C-suite is in the room, talking about the people in the C-suite like they're enemies. We can't get a budget we need to do this project, and it's all because of blah, 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 and it's always pointed upstairs. And when you've got this in any organization, the idea that it's us, everybody else versus the people who are running the company. I think the Gallup numbers, it's amazing that businesses are able to remain in business. They must be selling some pretty damn good products or services to stay in business when you've got the people, your management folks out of the C-suite and down into the workforce. Looking at the people who are running the company as tacit enemies. But this is what you get because the more you try to handle things with email and this, that, the other thing, unless if you're using those as the way you do business, as the way you treat people, then you've lost sight of the fact that technology is a tool and you've made it into a reflection of you. And who wants to be seen as being an email machine as opposed to being an intelligent, right, thoughtful person who can remember a subordinate's, first name? And so, and it's because of that you see tremendous amounts of opportunity that are missed where, you would, instead of having open exchanges of ideas the way they've had over, say, at Amazon over the years with the janitor can drop an idea into a Dropbox in the hallway, and if the company adopts it, then the janitor gets, a big bonus. And that's empowerment. People are recognized for their accumulated knowledge over the years and their experience, as opposed to being seen as, oh, we've got to get rid of, John Smith because he's been with the company now for 24 years and we're paying him too much money, and we can just sub him out and replace him. And which is really the mentality that's come along out there. Well, out the window goes all that accumulated knowledge and experience and people skills and all the rest of it, because people think that technology is capable of supplanting human talent. And I'll sit right here and tell you that's a complete line of nonsense. I could use a stronger word, but we are on a family radio show.
You already said damn. We didn't bleep it out.
So. It gets down to where you have got to create a culture. And I would tell the CEOs where you have to be seen and heard, not just read,
right,
through emails or dictums or memos or whatever. Your inability to be front and center as being seen by everybody you're in the organization with as having your sleeves rolled up and being in the good fight with them by cheek and by jowl is going to work against you every minute that you stay above it all and aloof and all the rest of that. Now, that's not to say that you have to give up you know, the things that you do at, as the leader of a company, which sometimes you have to make that hard decision, because sooner or later a decision has to get made, and not everyone is ever going to agree with every decision, as we know. So, but I'm not saying you give away, you cede your authority to be that decisive person, but what you do is that you create the absolute impression, or you brand yourself as being an open-minded, pragmatic human being, and not a dogmatic, my way or the highway memo, an email poster.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where you see this literal revolution of dissatisfaction that is, you know, really come to define this country and is crippling our economy and is creating so much of this negativity that's out there, you know, is really manifested because technology creep has overcome common sense.
Yeah. I think that's a huge point in first world lives as a whole. You know, it's like even my wife had a conversation with me the other day and she goes, "You are far more transparent with me over a text message than you are in person." And it's like,
well, we don't want to, we could spend 5 hours of shows going over that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we could.
Which
we
is,
could.
You know, partly, you know, it's like, I mean, that's just the challenge is we've got the technology now to communicate and it doesn't communicate well at all. I love that you said, who wants to be, you don't want to be known as an emailer, you know, and being
well, everybody,
out.
Everybody uses email and that's fine.
Right.
And it's just another form of communication. But what you don't want to be known as is you don't want to be known as being an email spouting machine.
There you go. That's the term. That's the adjectives you used. Exactly.
Because then every email you put out is regarded the same way by everybody as something that they're not going to read.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it all, yeah.
One of them happens to have the key to eternal salvation in it.
Yep.
No one's going to look at it because they're going to go, "Oh, that's just another email from Harrington. Why would I want to read that?"
Right. Exactly.
And so it goes on like that. And it's funny because people just really don't understand what's going on with all of this. I have three kids. So I have a son who's 25 and a daughter who's 22 and a daughter who's 18. And they're all very go-getter type kids and smart and fun to be around and athletic outdoors and you know, very much engaged with the world as a whole. In fact, my son and my daughter are both traveling Europe right now separately from one another. And they're doing it on their own money.
Yeah.
And then my 18-year-old is working in Manhattan, New York for a famous international photography retouching studio that does film and digital photography retouching for, you know, all the world's best magazines and this kind of stuff. And I mean, she graduated from high school when she was 16. And they're obviously totally immersed in the digital communications world.
Yeah, they're in it. They're
and
in it.
Which are that's all they've known since they've grown up.
Absolutely. That's
and so once in a while, they'll be sitting across from each other at a table and they'll actually text one another. They'll be 2 feet away.
I've been in a lot of meetings that I didn't want to listen to whoever was talking, so I was texting everybody.
And, I said to my son one day, and I said, and to my daughter Kate and my son Patrick, and I said, "Do you realize that there's some probably $2 or $3 trillion worth of physical network infrastructure that just stood between the two of you exchanging that text?"
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because it went, you know, out from the one phone to the tower, then down through all that rigmarole I described earlier,
yep.
And then finds its way out to the other smartphone, which happens only in this case be 2 feet apart. But I actually have people who are pretty smart people who think that those wireless devices communicate directly with each other through a cloud with lightning bolts.
Right, exactly. It's going to space to get there. All right, we're out of time. I got to cut you off. We're going to have Joe, John Harrington back with us. What do you say? We do that at part two?
Sure.
We do that at part two. John's going to be back with us next week, and we're going to start out with this whole business of, as a leader, you don't want to be known as an email spouting machine.
We're out of time. Biz Culture Matters, Clay 1180. Ask the experts at excellentcultures.com. See you next week.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTCultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.